The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
And joining me on the podcast right now and on video, I've got to remember to smile because we are on video. It's Paul Hill, of course, full-time investor, equity analyst. You're right, fella. End of Q1.
Well, happy April Fool's morning, Justin. Yeah. So I'm not going to sort of pull your leg about this and that sort of stuff. But yeah, you're right. It's end of the first quarter. It's been really, really busy for this last week. We've had a deluge of sort of small caps reporting sort of prelims. And I know you and I have been absolutely working probably 24/7. So it's been interesting, if nothing nice.
Yeah, I was thinking since April Fool's last year, the market's been having a big joke, you know, since the microcaps.
Not funny.
I know. Who's the joke on us? Small cap investors, you know. So it's been hard work. But you know what? Oddly, even though the markets are very bearish and everything's sold off, and you know, we said about this, is this a bottom? I did say last week or the week before, I think, on Twitter, I said, have we hit a bottom in the microcaps? I mean, obviously, they're very forward-looking, like you described before. You know, they tend to go into faster into a bear market, come out quicker, the small microcaps, because of liquidity and all that stuff. And in fact, I don't know if you saw that that thing, the 2-10-year yield curve temporarily inverted. But they're saying, if you look at that, it's not a short-term indicator. In fact, the medium return for the S&P 500 from the date the yield curve inverts at the market peak is 19%. It takes about 18 months on average, you know, to get that peak. So after it inverts, there's like a short-term rally, a good rally. And in fact, most of the time, it rallies strongly. So maybe in 18 months, we may see a recession happening. But until that time, I'm starting to see, even in fact, today, my stocks are looking quite... I haven't had all my stocks up. I've got one down, I think, but five are up. So it's looking quite... You know, are they seeing through this? Are they seeing beyond the problem with inflation? Are they seeing through all the bear worries or what?
Well, I must admit, first of all, observation, looking at your stocks every single day and thinking, well, they're all in green, so we must be at a good long-term perspective.
No, that hasn't happened for a while, honestly. I mean, literally, I'm used to looking up and seeing all my stocks in the red, pretty much. And I think it's very rare these days. I'd have to go back beyond last April Fool to see this happening. So, because, I mean, 2020 was a good year after April. It's almost like the end of Q1. 2020, that's where crash happened, you know, in March of 2020. Then we rallied all the way up then pretty much to March or April, pretty much 2021. Horrible year. And I think, hang on, there's a sea of change coming now. End of Q1, is it happening? I'm starting to see stocks move decently on news, whereas before, I'd say last, say, 6 months, the stocks would put news out and it just encouraged sellers to sell. What's going on?
All I would say is that, you know, take a long-term perspective. Don't trust swallows and predict summers straight away. But I would say what's really interesting is that when you look at historical data and you look at the inversion of the yield curve and you see stock appreciation, as you rightly point out, in the short term, heading into a recession and stuff. Nowadays, we're in a different environment. And the reason for that is because the market moves so quickly nowadays that we've probably had a stock recession already in small and micro caps over the last 6 to 9 months, as you and I can rightly attest to. And even if we get a recession in 18 months' time or 12 months' time or whatever it is, say, out in the US, et cetera, you may not have a major impact on small caps. On certain ones, you probably will, but across the board, you probably won't. And again, I sort of point this back to the great financial crisis in 2007, 2008, because small caps bottomed roughly around about a year before the FTSE 100 did. So you might find when we come to bringing that one forward here, because things have moved so fast, actually we are reaching a bottom already in small caps, predicting a recession in 12 to 18 months' time. So don't, in my view, I mean, I always look at it on a stock picking micro and, you know, sort of bottoms up and top down perspective. But I would say, you know, take a case by case you know, it's stock on a case by case basis, and look at actually how they're going to perform in tougher economic times. And you might find all the valuations already pricing in those tougher times. And if that's the case, then frankly, we should be absolutely fine. But I wouldn't presume just because all your stocks are green today, they're going to carry on. I would say, you know, be choosy, be selective as what we've currently do. But I'm not bearish, and I don't think you are either.
No. I mean, the stocks, you know, being up like this, like I said, I haven't seen that, you know, for a while. It's normally, you know, I've got the majority are in red, going nowhere, and I'm starting to see liquidity come through. And you know, you're right there. And I've said to a lot of people who are reading the macro bearish news, saying, listen, don't sell your stocks based on macro bearish news, because they don't work in conjunction at all. You can see the stock market rally, you know, it climb a wall of worry. As long as they know what the worries are, it can do that, and it's done that over and over again. So all you can do, you know, what's in your control, is looking at the businesses you've invested in. Are they performing? Okay, they may have had some macro wins. In fact, it's happened to a couple of my stocks, you know, and we had Biome Technologies come out, and they're an alternate, one-time sales at the moment, you know, and literally they were flat last year, but they had supply chain issues. They did $5.7 million of revenue, did again, and I think that's excellent considering that, you know, it took them 5 months, and their customers are in America, 5 months to ship to America when normally it's a month. And so this year, in fact, they just said in their update, they said, trading for the first quarter of 2022 has been in line with our expectations, and outlook for the year remains unchanged. Now, outlook for the year is 43% top line growth, you know, so they're very confident. So you're right. And these have come down from, like, they've halved, more than halved. So it's all priced in. Most of my stocks are not trading on anything. I mean, I think the maximum I've got is like 2x sales, if that, you know, so they've all been hit. And I'm thinking, the thing you take away from it, when they've all been hit, you've got to look at the valuations and think, that's a more, you know, investable company now. The value is greater, but yet the top line, the growth hasn't changed. And so that's all you can do. Yeah, so I try to explain to people, don't sell on macro fears if the business you invested in are still performing, because, you know, that's, what's the point? It's stupid. I try and liken it to real businesses all the time. I liken it to a hairdresser's, you know. I say, if you own a hairdresser's,
you know, hairdressers, yeah, you don't go there very often.
No. Well, I go there too often, to be honest. Listen,
I love that analogy.
They come in, and I say, if you owned a hairdresser's, a real business, a proper business in the high street, and it's doing well, okay, and you worry about inflation, you know, these headlines about inflation and war in Ukraine, you don't sell your business. You know, you're doing well. So, I mean, you must liken it to a real business, because people trade prices. That's the trouble. They don't look at the businesses. Look at the business. That's all it is. Because people, underlying these share prices are real businesses, you know? So that's all you can do. You know, pretty much ignore the macro. I mean, it's worth looking at if it's going to affect your companies. But, you know, don't sell things just because the world is worrying.
Just on exactly that same example, there's two companies that I've sort of, like, you know, been following. One, Michelmersh, came out with their results. They're basically a premium brick manufacturer. And, I mean, they had a really strong 2021. The fears basically are such that because it's a big energy consumer, you know, it buys electricity and gas, et cetera, to do its brick making, then that's going to crimp margins going forward. But they've actually hedged out this year 90% of all of their energy usage and energy prices. So they're going to be absolutely fine for this year. And they've done quite a bit for the next couple of years as well. So on that perspective, given it's going to be an inflationary environment and rising brick prices, they're going to be absolutely fine. And again, the shares have come off heavily. And it's that classic sort of baby in the bathwater. So if you're looking at a good long-term business with niche positions, really strong economy, you know, sort of like barriers to entry, and, you know, they haven't got that many competitors other than really from, you know, imports, etc., because they do those sort of the premium bricks, and you get that premiumization now of people nesting and wanting to have nice looking properties and all that kind of stuff. And also 50% of their business is repair, maintenance, and upgrading. then they're going to do absolutely fine. And again, it's the same. I mean, the shares have come off. I can't remember exactly where they were. The last time I saw them were about 116 this morning. Mm-hmm. And they're trading at around about 7x EBITDA. Normally, they trade at around about sort of like 10 to 12 times EBITDA. So, you know, I could easily see this well over 150, 160, et cetera. And I think that's around about the same sort of price as Canaccord have. Another one in that same perspective is Lords Group Trading. And I haven't spoken to this, spoken to you about this one, but...
No, what are they? They listed...
Today.
What's that?
They listed last year. I think they raised about 50 million quid in July at about 95p. The shares are about a quid this morning. And they've really sort of like, they've got an inspirational sort of founder, Shankar Patel, who's actually about yours and my age, actually. I've spoken to him sort of offline, and he's a tremendous guy. He really is an entrepreneurial sort of like leader, and I'm hoping to bring him on for an interview in the next couple of weeks as well. But I've got to twist his arm to do so. But anyway, they basically have 80%. They're building products. 50% of their business is building products, specialist building products, and the other 50% is plumbing, heating, sort of like a distributor out in the UK, and they're aiming to get to a turnover of about 500 million. When you put their current business with a few acquisitions they've done, they're on around about a run rate of about just over about 440 million, I think, is if you look at it on a pro forma basis. So they're not actually far off now. The idea is to improve their EBITDA margins as they go forward by doing a sort of buy and build and then grow strategy, which is going real gangbusters. So, you know, I could see this top line, that sort of combination going up sort of double digits for many years, you know, going forward. And they're going to expand their margins as they get economies of scale and they bring sites together. But they made a couple of acquisitions, just they announced them this morning, one in their plumbing and heating business on about sort of 5x, I think it was EBITDA, which they've got a really good brand in there called Mr. Central Heating, which is really sort of like chiming with consumers. And they want to expand that on a national presence. And then the other one was in the building products business, where again they're trying to sort of fill out their UK geographical footprint. So they've come off. I think they went to about a high of about 140, 150p, and they're about a pound. And again, I mean, I could see when I run the rule on it, I mean, just indicatively, my fair value is at least 130, if not, you know, significantly higher. And they're gonna grow faster than their competitors. And if you look at the industry, you know, you've got people like Travis Perkins saying they're seeing no signs of a slowdown, particularly in repair, maintenance, and you know, sort of like the upgrading side or improvement. And that's 80% of Lords Group's business. So they've really long secular growth drivers.
I think there'd be more of that, because if interest rates go up, you know, you may get less people, you know, buying new houses and more than doing them up and maintaining them and all that stuff. So you may see more of that kind of maintenance stuff going on, wouldn't you, you know?
Well, I mean, you haven't just got... I mean, if you actually look at, you know, what are the sort of like the secular growth drivers, the government has pledged to build 300,000 new properties every single year, okay? They currently do 200,000. So that's a 50% increase just on new build. And every single new build is going to need plumbing, heating, and all that kind of stuff. Plumbing and heating is obviously going to be, and is at the moment, is massively important in terms of meeting the country's net zero target by 2050. So all that decarbonisation. Plus, with the sort of the buildings products, you haven't just got, you know, repair, maintenance, and you know, improvements. You've also got, you know, the commercial building, which is now, you know, picking up. You've got things like HS2 wanting the new stations. You've got sort of like just you know, old aging housing stock as well that needs to be upgraded to meet all these decarbonisation targets and stuff. So they're in a really nice position. So yes, historically, maybe the housing market there's a cyclical nature, but there's actually a big secular nature. And when you see the shares of all of the whole of the sector falling simply because people are worried about a big you know, recession, etc., then actually, yes, it might sort of take some of the sort of the, you know, the froth off the market. But frankly, it's still going to be, you know, moving ahead because the world needs to change to effectively a more efficient, a more, you know, sort of like a less carbon intensive industry going forward. And they're well placed to do that, even though the shares are valuing in a much, much tougher economic environment.
Yeah. No, I keep saying, people, the stock market doesn't act logically, or it, as we see it. When you get the news coming out that's bearish, like I said, some of it's priced in, and you can't just assume the market's going to sell off. It doesn't do what you think it's going to do, you know? Yeah. Simple as that.
Well, just on that one, talk me through Polarian then, because this one's been a bit like the Big Dipper at Blackpool.
Well, I've taken some big hits this year. Polarian was one of them. Of course, they got a complete response letter from the FDA. That wasn't in the plan. The plan was, according to most people and the brokers, 90% chance of success rate, FDA approval. Didn't happen. They got knocked back. Turns out, from what I'm gathering, the issues were not big issues, and some of them being covered already. FDA was super overrun. Any queries, they just can't go back to you. They'll just knock it back and say, we need some space and time. So, but Polarian took their time. They've resubmitted their new drug application. They said it'll take 6 months. And they said the company's making full use of this time regarding commercialization. And they still say, you know, it's still a huge product, you know, hugely scalable, and a huge unmet need. Examining sort of lung functions in the way they can that no one else can at the moment. So it is like sort of like the best in class. It's innovative. And I'm assuming now the boxes have all been ticked, you know, from the FDA's approval side. So they say 6 months. It could be sooner than that. But the shares have bounced. They're up to, 68 pence. But this is still coming down from 98, almost a quid a share. So, yeah, but it'll be nice for this to go forward. But again, I'm still not trusting of the FDA or their approval process. I did scale out a little bit when it bounced from the initial fall. Mm. I'm going to wait till the approval, and it may rise then, but on dips, I'll probably buy back in. But I'm still not trusting of the FDA process, so I'm going to, you know, sit back on a small position I have. But I still, you know, love the company, love their technology, and I think it could be massive. It's hugely scalable, you know. And it's odd, you know, that people, you know, that the share price has taken a massive knock, and some people assume because the share price has taken a knock, the original, you know, investment thesis is out the window, and it's not at all, you know. It's got, and sometimes they say that's when the opportunity arises for some people. Like I said, there's still significant unmet medical need in their area. They are the number one in this area, you know. I mean, there are all the biggest institutions and universities are using them. Oxford University, they've come with, you know, they've had hundreds of papers published on it, saying that you can even detect long COVID when nothing else can, like MRI scans. So it's way out there, you know, and 5-6 years still ahead of their competitors, if they have competitors, like-for-like competitors, but I don't think they do. So, yeah, I mean, it's hugely scalable. You know, we talked about that, you've talked about that, you know, best in class. In fact, I was thinking of you the other day, because you mentioned best in class, go for companies that are best in class. I don't know if you saw the truth in hookup with Lloyds. They've signed a letter of intent, commercialization letter is going to happen. Lloyds have invested in Truefin. But even Lloyds are saying on their website, you know, that this Targo, the software is best in class, and they said transformational deal. It's the UK's biggest retail bank. It's phenomenal to do the first software as a service contract with the biggest retail bank in the UK. That's you know, if you set up a business, that would be your golden dream, wouldn't it? You know, teaming up with someone like Lloyds. But they say, you know, Lloyds said, they said we're going to create the best in class solution for UK businesses. And if you look at the broker's note, has the value of Satargo more than twice the value of Truefin. You know, and yet there's still more deals to come. I mean, James came on the podcast, the CEO, and he said, we are talking with people in advanced discussions with many companies. He said, I said, are they well known? He said, put it this way, my mother would know these companies, and your mother would as well. They're that well known. And so on Lloyd's deal alone, they value Satargo more than twice Truefin's valuation. And there's other parts of the business doing very well. Like Oxygen is profitable now. Virtus is profitable. Playstack, the gaming side, is they've got the funds raised to get that to profitability and to target the profitability. So, yeah, sooner or later, I think this is going to have a massive rise when people realise the potential that Lloyd's is going to give and the cash flow and the revenue. So, nice to see that. But
I've spoken to a number of fund managers on Truefin, and they've all said the same thing as you, is that this is a huge unbundling opportunity, and the area actually which really attracts them is the gaming side. So, if Satago is worth double the value anyway, and then they think that the actual game is even more, then it just more than underpins.
Well, what's interesting is like people don't know about this, but like PlayStack is like a platform, you know, for funding for developers, for publishers of games. They've got loads of games on there. They just launched their Engage platform, which is in game advertising, non-intrusive in game advertising. Now there's another company on the market called Bidstack that are doing that. And Bidstack are valued at, 43 million? And literally, that's, you know, Truefin also own games. So that Mortal Shell was one of a massive hit last year. It sold 500,000 copies. So they not only own games, but they have the ad tech to go inside them. And Playstack is valued way below Bidstack, you know, on its own. So, it's amazing. And you know, Satago, hugely scalable. It's software, you know. Of course, the most of the investment has gone into it now, and it's hugely scalable. And I see one of the biggest, you know, it's like Plarium, you know, in that sense, globally scalable. And so I'm very excited about that, yeah.
I think you certainly need to, when I've talked about sort of best-in-class technology, you need to choose that in the technology software and, more importantly, obviously, in the healthcare sector. And I'll just give two examples to that. I mean, as you know, I own AstraZeneca. It's come out with no major news over the last couple of weeks other than the continued sort of approvals. But the shares now are over £100. And, you know, I bought them about 70, et cetera. And they really have absolutely terrific healthcare, R&D and drug discovery, particularly in immunology and kidney disease and stuff like that. So, and respiratory. So they're doing really, really well. And then two other but much smaller companies, again, in those sort of hotspots. First of all, you know, in healthcare is Lung Life, and they came out with sort of on-track results earlier in the week. I haven't actually spoken to Paul Pagano yet, but I mean, and basically they're on a mission over the next 12 months to complete their validation study, which will put a tick in the box for their Lung LB test as a world-class and industry-leading diagnostic for early-stage lung cancer using cancer circulating tumor cells just from a single blood test. And that's got a predictive score of roughly around about 90%. I think it was 89%. And in fact, when that comes to market, hopefully going to get results in the validation study in 12 months' time. They've got plenty of money to take them to that. And again, that could be a huge sort of like value catalyst for the actual business. But they say that's world-class technology. And another one is Verici. And they basically do the diagnostics, a full end-to-end suite for organ donor transplants, particularly sort of centering on sort of kidney transplants. They have two lead tests which are currently going through the validation study. I think is finished. They're gathering all the data at the moment, and then they've got another test as well, which is it's sort of like survivability and of the actual graft a bit later on. And I think they announced this morning that actually they're
expanding
they're basically expanding it. They're going to get more data from their European test sites. So that's just going to push the clock sort of like slightly to the right, I think.
It doesn't make
any difference. It doesn't make any difference at all to their commercialization strategy, because they'd already basically built this one in, essentially. So they're fine. But again, the big picture is that they have world class, in fact, best in class, you know, kidney transplants, diagnostics and prognostics. So, you know, it's just as a matter of waiting for this to come through and to validate, assimilate all the study data together, come out with a tick in the box and then commercialise it, which is going to be on track for later this year.
Well, yeah, 6 to 8 weeks. I was reading about that. I think it's odd. In America, they can do the clinical study trials remotely, you know, but in Europe, they need to actually be there in person. Hello, it's me.
Does that surprise you?
No, it's nuts, isn't it? So, let's move online, guys.
Yeah. I know, but particularly during a pandemic, do you want some idiots coming into hospitals and or labs? You know, I mean, it's absolutely nuts, but, you're right. I mean, crazy. And then another one in the healthcare sector, which is again is best in class, which is coming to sort of like, you know, commercialization, is already, you know, selling its products, is portable oxygen concentrator sort of manufacturer, Bellascura. And they came out with a really transformational acquisition, actually, because they're presently focusing on the state with their contract manufacturers, and that's where they get their supply. But the really big market, obviously, for respiratory disease is actually out in Asia, where they still actually, you know, they smoke, etc. So what they announced this week, which was, say, was transformational, is that they've signed an agreement with InnoMax, which is basically a firm to build their patented portable oxygen concentrators out in Shenzhen, I think it is. Or out in anyway China, but the contract manufacturer is under a master supply agreement, is actually an affiliate for one of the world's largest sort of like contract electronics manufacturers, and I don't know because it doesn't say at all. But when you then look at that particular company on LinkedIn, it's associated with Foxconn.
Okay.
it's an affiliate of Foxconn. So, they're the biggest contract manufacturer in the world and supply Apple. So I think you can guarantee that they're going to have best-in-class sort of techniques and production and stuff. So to go to partner with that type of quality business, if it is, you know, sort of like a subsidiary or an affiliate of Foxconn, is just it just says everything that not only is it gives Bellascura assurance that this is going to work, but also it just shows it's a huge endorsement of somebody like, if it is Foxconn, to as a pat on the back about the technology that this is winning and will be in the market. Not surprisingly, the shares responded well during the week because once you can get that sort of like stamp of approval by somebody who's so higher quality, then it just shows you the technology works.
Yeah, well, just saying this, the share price there was like, at the start of the year, above 140, and with the market, it started grinding lower. And then then it almost touched 80. Then it jumped back up, and it's back to 112 now. So that's news has changed the direction of that. Good. Big gap up on the chart there on that news.
Yeah. And then my largest position so far in my portfolio was, again, so I haven't sold any shares, as you know, is Equals, and they came out with some absolutely terrific.
Yeah, I saw that. Good.
I just keep banging the drum on this one because, you know, I bought in there, what, about 18 months ago. And as I say, I haven't sold any at all, and the shares have carried on rising. But I still think they're really cheap. They're currently roughly around about 76, 77p. What they said in the statement is such that, you know, they had a really strong Q4 last year, which was great, as everybody, you know, thought it they had. But they've come out with they've backed it up with another really strong Q1. And I think they've seen like-for-like growth of over 70% year on year, which is just incredible, all driven by their B2B division. And a big slug of that is their new solutions service, which it's sort of like is attracting larger corporate clients that want sort of multi-currency, single account, IBAN type of banking and foreign exchange. And this allows them to really go up that food chain, not only from their sweet spot of small, medium sized companies, but up into the big bulge bracket. And they're just winning new business hand over fist, which is great. And it gives them that sort of like wiggle room to be able to invest in further growth. And that's what sort of like the CEO Ian Stratford Taylor and the CFO Richard Cooper are currently doing. So yes, they will get some drop through coming through on EBITDA this year on the extra growth, but they're going to reinvest into the sort of the top line and continue that sort of virtual circle. As I say, when it comes to sort of valuation, I don't get anything less than a £1.30 on this. So I'm just going to carry on holding. And the trajectory momentum of the business, I mean, this could well, it'll be well over a pound, I'm sure, by the end of this year. And the only reason why it currently is less than anything like 90p is because, you know, one of their largest shareholders, Crystal Amber, has been selling shares over the last sort of like, you know, 12 months into this rally. And that's sort of held the shares back. So even though it's moved hard and strong on very, very good numbers, the underlying intrinsic worth of the business has actually significantly outperformed even the share price. So if I was going to be a betting man, I would say there is more upside now in the shares at 77p than there was when I originally bought 18 months ago, simply because the business has outperformed in its fundamentals the share price. It's a big position, but yeah, I'm not going to sell.
No, well, exactly. That's it. Someone asked me actually in the webinar, say, you've talked about, you know, why you buy a company and look at the valuation and all that stuff. And, you know, and then, but what about getting out of a company? I said, well, listen, if the top line is growing, even if the share price is going up, you know, the valuation metric doesn't expand this. It's the same. It's just still below peers or still a good value. And they're still improving. The top line is still growing. Why would you sell? You know, it just don't run your winners if they're still improving, you know, because, hold on to it. Look at the chart there. But, it may have to go sideways for a while, I think. But, absolutely. More figures come out, I think better figures, it'll just go up again, won't it, you know? So,
carry on enjoying it. I mean, another one I own as well, which is a sort of small cap, which is basically in build tech software, is Alico, and that came out with some very, very in-line results. They're going through this transition from effectively perpetual licenses to SaaS. And yes, it's going to be a transformational year. It's going to be, you know, a transitionary year, not in 2022. And that's going to take off. If you looked on a like-for-like basis, I mean, I estimated that this transition to recurring revenues and SaaS from perpetual licenses will knock off at least sort of 5%, both on the sort of like the EBIT margin, but also on the sort of the top line like-for-like growth. And so you're going to get a relatively flat performance. And I would say the share is currently at a pound, you know, very, very cheap. And I have a fair value of at 150. So, you know, I mean, I'm long and strong on that one. I've never sold any. I've held them for 5 or 6 years. But when you're on to stocks with such fabulous technology, like Equals, like Alico, and basically they're commercializing the business and they're run by excellent people, then, you know, why do you want to sell? And you just carry on holding and holding and holding. And they may well get bought out, because if I can see the value, I mean, I'm an idiot. And if I can see the value, I can sure other people will be able to. So either at some point the shares like Plarium will pop, or alternatively, you know, somebody's going to take them off the market.
Yeah. Do you know what? Yesterday on the podcast, and it's another stock. Luckily, two big hits I've taken this year, pretty much, of Plarium over the last 12 months and Gfinity recently. But I still hold, and I still believe in the business. But Gfinity had this. The first time I've spoken to this guy called Jonathan Hall, he's been with Gfinity from the start, pretty much. But he's noticed the transition they've undergone with John Clark, and he said that is transitioning from, you know, a yearly contract business on services to big brands for esports companies with low margin, and now to owning stuff like, you know, gaming sort of websites and all this stuff that they have, advertising and communities. And he said that is the first leg of growth, and it's going very well. I mean, like I said, they've did 1.6 million in revenue in the first 6 months. They did that in the year last year, and so they launched Gfinity Digital Media. They've gone from 4 pence per average user, the cost, to 23 pence, and from like I think it was like below 10 million visits a month on the website now to 17 million in March. And so, the average cost per user is not linear. The more the more sites you get and the more eyeballs you get, the higher you can charge and the engagement. And it's really happening. It's really starting to take off. And he said the second leg of the growth is the tech. And he said, normally we use our own IP tech for esports. You know, it does everything from in-game chat to monitoring, you know, sort of races, car races, or the scores, or anything like that. And he said it is best in class. We use it for, you know, the Premier League. We use it for Formula One esports, all that. They love it. So now we're going from doing this bespoke version of that to each company to productizing that so they can literally automate it and they can license it as a software. And he says there's a huge upside in that. Of course, it'll take a bit of time, but those two areas compared to the old business model is going to grow. But, you know, transition's not very easy. But now they've got the cash and they keep saying, do you know what? The share price is such now, because take the big dip. They are less than half of peers, you know, valuations, and yet they're going to be profitable in 2023. So I'm holding on to them because I'm looking forward to that IP tech being rolled out as a software as a service model. And yet the media sites are doing very well. And in fact, you know, it's funny, actually. I came in from doing the webinar on Wednesday, and I went in my son's bedroom. And he's normally on the PS5 sometimes. I said, why aren't you playing your PS5? He said, oh, the controller's not working. I said, well, there's no batteries. He said, no, there's no batteries in those. You charge them, and that's it. And he couldn't charge it. So I did a search about why is the PS5 controller not charging? The first website to come up in the Google search was Stealth Optional, which is a site owned by Gfinity. I thought, that's domain authority, you know? I clicked in it. Straight away, I get served with an advert for something I've been looking at, for example, and also a link to their site as well for other things. Stock Informer is also one of the sites. But it's very clever the way it's done, you know. It's not only they're getting now Google rankings very high, and they've got you know, 13 websites that work with each other to serve customers across. And they're all connected, gaming and hobbyists, you know. So it's gathering momentum. It'll take a while, but the share price take a knock as it has. It means now, rather than trading in line with peers, it's trading half, you know, peer average. So it's like two times sales, pretty much. They're going to be profitable next year. Not many esports gaming people can say that, you know. So I'm holding on because the scale is there, the margin. I mean, they've gone from literally 16% or less than that margins previously to John Clark coming in to now over 60% gross margins. So it's getting there, you know. But it takes time, doesn't it? You can't transition a business overnight and you will have hiccups in the road. And I see why the share price dips. Some people don't believe the story anymore, but just read the story. It's what they've been saying. It's happening, you know? So there we are. Anyway, I have confidence, Paul.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, I'll just sort of come full circle to when we first we started in terms of, you know, your small cap holdings, et cetera. And top level, we've seen it as interest rates rise, this rotation from big tech, you know, massively overvalued into sort of more value and sort of the oil and gas stocks and commodity stocks, etc., and to sort of like, you know, the normal, the old traditional sort of like old economy stocks. So we've seen that rotation. Now, given what we've just talked about, I actually think if we're right and we do see a harder economy going forward, a bit of sledging, and the small caps has already sort of like, you know, anticipated that and sold off, then we're going to see a rotation, as you did in the great financial crisis, from large cap into small cap, or certainly on a relative basis with a small cap. So when it comes to sort of top level positioning, then you probably don't want to be too heavy in large cap, which has been basically the last 6 months, a bit of a flight to quality. Or should we say a flight to safety, a safety trade? So if we do get a tougher economic environment and possibly, heaven forbid, a recession in 18 months' time, small cap stocks, micro stocks that you and I own are probably going to be okay because we're already there anyway. And so we're going to be flat or up. But if you're heavy into the old sort of like supposedly perceived safety trades in big cap, you might find actually in the FTSE 100 or whatever, they come off, and those the old economy or whatever it is, you know, your multi-hundred-billion-dollar businesses have a tough time for the next 18 months because their valuations haven't readjusted to a tougher economic environment. So that's quite an interesting observation that people might want to consider.
Yeah.
Is that, because I've not heard that talked about before. But
well, I've seen a couple of people posting their Q1 results and they've done quite well. These are mainly people in oil and gas producers, you know? And I said, that's good you're in this, but don't overexpose because if we see some kind of let-up in the war, and every producer at the moment, I've just talked to a couple of producers on the podcast, they're pumping like crazy. They're pumping like crazy. You know? So, if you see a let-up in the Ukraine situation, all will come off. In fact, it seems to be double-topped already. And you've got Biden now pumping. And if you get a recession, all will take a hit. You know, so be careful you're not overexposed to that, the all play, because it can take a hit. If recession is going to come forward, that's what takes a hit. So,
But the point is, it isn't just sort of the oil and gas, which is. If you look at consumer staples, etc., if you look at sort of like big, even the sort of the big FANG stocks and stuff like that, then actually they're, because of March, their valuations have gone back up again. And they are absolutely not priced in to a sort of recession. They're still well over 20 times PE, most of those stocks.
Yes,
sector-wise, some of them have come off in sort of like, you know, as we've talked about, in building and repair and maintenance and upgrading and stuff like that, and a bit on the banking. But there are huge swathes of large cap land that are still trading at pretty elevated valuations. And if we do get a tougher period, it isn't just oil and gas. You just don't want to be in there, full stop, because you're going to get multiple compression. You, I, and the dog in all small things, small cap and micro cap, have seen multiple decimation over the last sort of like, you know, six months, et cetera. So again, coming back to an observation, if your portfolio is structured such that it's heavy on expensive large cap because they're considered as safety trades, then you may find actually you're going to get some pretty tough some tough times over the next 18 months as those valuation multiples come off, whereas you and I are likely to do slightly better on a relative basis because we're in small cap land that we've already had that readjustment.
Yeah, but also, I mean, when it comes down to it, you should always look at, like you say, you know, growth and value. If the value is there, if they're not overly valued, you know, and they've still got good growth, then you're not far from. You're going to always have volatility, of course. But I mean, you know, as long as you're not chasing these 100 times revenue stocks that are just hot for the sake of being hot, you know, then it's ridiculous. No, I know what you mean. There'll be a rotation, definitely. And you said, you know, we were saying it a year now, pretty much. I was looking at the chart of yesterday, just topped up the figures for Q1 and looked at the spreadsheet. And from my portfolio value started coming down in basically June last year, but I noticed a liquidity drying up, like I said, you know, halfway through the second quarter. So now it's been a year pretty much where it started getting a bit.
What's your portfolio year to date so far, the end of Q1?
Q1, let me just get, I did have it up here. So 15% down in Q1 for the
bloody
year.
Hell, right, okay.
Yeah, for the year, it's having bumps a bit. But for the year, the last 12 months, 18.7%. So, but 2021
well, down,
overall,
down
yeah,
or up?
Yeah, yeah, for the year, for the last 12 months, yeah.
Sorry, down or up?
Down 18.7.
Okay, so you're 15% down in the Q1, but an 18% full year. Yeah, okay.
But like I said, now it's been the most.
What's it over sort of pre-pandemic? If you looked at say the start of 2020.
Well, I'll go back
2 years.
2021, I did 26%. In 2020, I did 84%.
So this is just short-term noise in a much bigger picture.
Last 3 years, 300% I've done. So last 4 years, 450%.
Well, you can't be flipping too choosy, I mean, can you? You've had the upside, hell.
But that's it. I'm probably because I've had a
You're being greedy, Justin.
Yeah, I've had a good few years. Really have good. I made excellent few years. And this year has been the hardest. The last 12 months have been the hardest I've had for many a year. I know. So, but like I said,
Four years ago, Justin, if you'd have said you were going to be at 400%, but you're going to have a bit of a tougher last period of it, you'd have taken, you'd have bit that person's arm off. I think you can give yourself a pat on the back.
But you know what? I could have done though. Literally, I could have probably scaled out. You know, at the time, again, people say, "Oh, when I get back into break even, I'll sell." No, you don't. Because the entire market is bullish then, and it rallies way beyond where you think, and you think, I'm going to hold on, it's going to the moon. And when everyone's at that period where it's going to rally to the moon, you know, no one believes it's going to sell off. Like right now, everyone's very bearish. No one believes it's going to buy, it's going to go up. It probably will. And when it's at the top, it comes down because no one believes it will. And that's why I never try and pregress the market. If you're bearish right now because of all the headlines and all that stuff, this is probably one of the best times to buy, you know, absolutely, especially in the microcap space, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, marvelous. Brilliant. Okay, cool. We'll speak to you in a couple of weeks' time.
Yeah, speak to you next week. And I think in 2 weeks' time, I think we'll be really bullish, too bullish. And even though the macro outlook will be a bit bearish. But
well, lots more announcements up until Easter anyway.
Cheers, boys.
And this is and given your shirt, this is definitely a bit of an April Fool. So,
what is it with your shirt? You're jealous. I'm going to send you some shirts. I know you're jealous. I'll send you some.
I was almost expecting you to sort of like, you know, turn up with your Ronald McDonald type of hamburger outfit with your big shoes and your yellow.
Look at my portfolio of the last 12 months. It's been managed by a clown by the looks of it, so that's quite appropriate. Marvellous. Cheers, Paul. Speak in 2 weeks.
Yeah, bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.